On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. Be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter your code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. October's Loot Crate theme is mythical. You hear the stories, the whispers of creatures and beings beyond imagination. Join us as we peer into the shadows and look into the other realms of October's truly mythical collection. Get unreal items from Marvel, Ghostbusters, Stranger Things, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. You want to get fancy? Get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Don't forget, before October 19th, go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. Loot Crate, it's the best surprise you know is coming. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thanks for being with us again this week as we preview week 5 of the NFL season. I am your host, Arthur Arkus, joined by my co-host, Eric Edholm. Eric, what's going on, my man?
Thanks for letting me come back after last week. I had to duck out and not join the show, so thank you for having me back in the rotation.
Yeah, we had Hub Arkus pinch hitting for Eric, who was on assignment last week, but we are thrilled to have him back, of course. And we got some interesting games to preview. Before we do, Eric, though, I think this is worth addressing. I think that you agree. Cam Newton stepped in it Wednesday night. We're taping here Thursday morning. The Cam Newton, the MVP version of Cam Newton, Eric, appears on the field for the first time in a year. We get to talk about it for 72 hours until he changes the conversation to his immaturity and lack of awareness. Why don't you just fill in listeners on what happened and what you think of it?
Yeah, Wednesday was Cam's normal session with the media. You know, most quarterbacks do talk to the local media on Wednesdays prior to a Sunday game. And so, you know, midway through, Jordan Rodrigue, who's a beat writer for the Charlotte Observer, who's been there for over a year. She's been covering the team since, I believe, the start of the 2016 season or at some point in that calendar year, asked Cam Newton a question about, I believe, Devin Funchess and sort of the physicality of his routes. And during the question, you could kind of see Cam smirking when she says the word routes and he pauses and waits and considers his answer and says, "It's funny to hear a female talk about routes." And nobody in the room laughed. It wasn't funny because Everyone's like, "Wait, what?" You know, I mean, the number of talented female journalists who are in our field now, I mean, it has gone exponentially up in the last 20 years, 15 years, certainly since Cam Newton's been in the league. And Cam just went on to answer the question as if it was no big deal. Jordan then goes up to him afterward and says, "Hey, Cam, can we talk this through a little bit here?" And she said her exchange was worse and that there was no apology. There was no proper explanation for what he said. And so, Arthur, I think it was just Cam Newton putting his foot in his mouth and then having no idea why he was being questioned about it. It was just a tone deafness by him. And there's been no apology. There's been nothing else since then.
And that you're absolutely right. He paused for a moment. You can see the video. Pull it up. It's on YouTube. It's went viral.
Yep.
He pauses to think about his answer, and then he still goes through with it. So it's just, again, a lack of awareness, a lack of restraint. And I was a little troubled, Eric, by the Panthers. They issued a release that said Jordan and Cam have discussed this, and I know that Cam expressed regret. Jordan released her own statement that said absolutely Cam had an opportunity to apologize and chose not to.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This thing, I don't know that it would have gone away, but it would have cycled out of the news very quickly had Cam afterwards said, "You know what, shouldn't have said that." And what Cam's explanation seemed to be was that, "Oh, well, what I should have said was that no media members have any clue about routes." But unfortunately, even if he had said that ha-ha jokingly, men and women, any sex, anybody, you know, that's fine, but, you know, we're paid to do a job, and that's to ask questions, to find out answers. If we don't know something, we're going to ask the question and say, "Hey, Cam, can you talk me through this? Can you explain this to me? You are the supposed expert in this." And he ends up doing something pretty stupid and then not realizing. And it may cost him endorsements. We've heard reports about, you know, his yogurt company maybe backing out. I don't know if there's other people who've denied that's true. But still, it seems to be that Cam has always been in a place where he doesn't always understand his surroundings. He doesn't always understand the power of his words. He doesn't understand his perspective and why it may not be probably where it needs to be.
If our listeners are sitting and rolling their eyes, understand Cam yeah. Newton, former league MVP, right. One of the faces of this league. And disappointing. Again, he's been struggling on the field, finally breaks out, and just too bad that this is what had to come up next. And Eric, I should just add, it was a great question by Jordan. Devin yeah. Funchess coming off the best game of his career, yep. A former second-round pick who hasn't fulfilled expectations, and it was an astute observation and a totally fair, smart question by Jordan.
And if Cam had challenged her on something, I'm totally fine with that.
Yes, it happens all the time.
I am 100% fine with Cam Newton telling me I'm wrong or telling her she's wrong, or if he makes a good point, actually, you know what, he wasn't open on that play, let me explain, mm-hmm. or has something actually valuable to say. But he made it a sexist thing, and I just think that it's just so immature. Should we spend 5 days talking about, I don't know. Will Cam Newton ever figure it out? Who knows? But, you know, all the excitement and the momentum that was built out that New England win, that's just put to the side now. Everyone's talking about this instead.
Eric, if only some scouts had seen this coming when he was out of college. Our listeners probably know, too, Pro Football Weekly. Go look up the scouting report from Nolan Naraki. There were certain people that kind of had an idea that maybe this is who Cam Newton was many years ago. So, yeah. Hey, people can change. But, again, the fact that he immediately had a chance to walk it back and try and not allow this to blow up into a huge story and chose not to. This is, you know, he's kind of put himself in this position, obviously. So anyway, that's the big news story as we tape here Thursday morning. But there's a lot of good games on the schedule. And hey, why don't we just start with the Panthers coming off that big win and heading into Detroit. And the Lions have been one of the bigger stories of the early season, not because Matthew Stafford coming off the record contract, but because of the way they're playing defense and an interesting matchup of two good defenses. And again, two teams coming off big road upsets, Eric.
Yeah, right. And obviously, you know, in New England, the Carolina Panthers go in there and play a great offensive game. Cam Newton breaks out. We see aspects of him running the football that we haven't really seen to this point. You know, after that interception, threw with confidence, you know, was attacking a secondary that's had its issues. But this Lions defense seems like it is the opposite right now of what New England is, in the sense that they're moving well, they're communicating well, they're anticipating throws, you know, they're making plays, they've got that nice three safety thing going. Now Warlow's out, I know they have to adjust a little, but Anthony Zettel's been a great pass rush threat. It's been fun to watch that defense come together. On the other side, Carolina, they limit the big plays, but they give up, you know, 71% of their, you know, passing to the opposing team. So, you know, is Stafford going to nickel and dime him to death? How does that work? It's going to be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We should mention the Lions have done it without their first-round pick, Jared Davis, the past couple weeks. He's been out with a concussion. They could get him back. And Glover Quinn has to be one of the more underrated players in football, right?
Yep.
Four takeaways and is kind of catalyzing what they're doing there on the back end. No one knows Anthony Zettel's name yet, but they will soon. He's been their best pass rusher, the former sixth-round pick.
Yep.
If the Panthers are kind of a star-laden defense, Terrell Lawson's doing this. He's coaching those guys up, a lot of guys we're not as familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, Tahir Whitehead, I know he had some issues in that Giants game. He's played well since, you know, and Miles Killebrew's a fun little player,
yeah,
great athlete, explosive kind of player back there on the back end. So, you know, they go get the corner from New England. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Corner from New England.
I come up, but they signed him as a free agent in the offseason. I'll come up with it in a second. But, yeah, I mean, this group has come together. When we thought that maybe they didn't have a pass rush, when they thought that maybe the coverage would take a little while to come together.
It's a safety, Tavon Wilson, right?
Tavon Wilson had before.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, I guess, what I was thinking of, yeah. But, yeah, it's just been a good group together. And you know, Darius Slay is the best at what he does. They get special teams contributions from Agnew now. And the offensive line's been better and tougher. But Lang, Wagner hurt this week? We'll see.
Yeah, so far so good for the Lions. I didn't see this coming, I have to admit it, and they've exceeded expectations thus far to be a really interesting matchup of 3-1 teams. Eric, the other big story, of course, this week, and we're taping here on Thursday, so it's been out there, of course, but the quarterback injuries to Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just look at the Ravens heading into Oakland, and it's going to be EJ Manuel versus Joe Flacco. That should really move the TV ratings needle, but the Raiders had problems before Derek Carr got hurt.
I mean, we've
seen some mortality from that offensive line. Amari Cooper not resembling the former fourth overall pick right now. Can Oakland kind of dig out of this trouble? Now they'll have to do it with their new number two quarterback in EJ Manuel.
Yeah, Crabtree's been banged up. I know he got off to kind of a hot start there, but they've been really inconsistent lately. You know, Marshawn Lynch hasn't run well. I mean, he's at about 3 yards a clip right now. They've taken him off the field in a lot of circumstances, too. The offensive line, such a great strength last year, now has spots that are really concerning. You go back and watch that Washington game, you know, they were on the field about 50 snaps offensively, which is a low total, and they were giving up pressures on about half of them, whether it was against the run or in the pass. So, yeah, there's a lot going on out there. But then you flip the coin and say, the Ravens are clearly in worse shape.
Yeah.
You know, Ronnie Stanley gets hurt last week. Marshall Yanda's out. You know, they're using spare parts at every offensive position, and they're holding Flacco together with duct tape. So, I don't know. I mean, I would say the Ravens are in worse shape, but the Raiders are concerning. This is a team some people thought could be a Super Bowl team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And obviously the juxtaposition of what the Chiefs have done, of course, in the same division. And we knew it was going to be a good division, but no one knew the Chiefs were going to be this good, and the Broncos coming off the big win as well. So kind of an interesting development there. Just moving down the schedule a little bit here. What about the January rematch? Packers go back into Arlington to face the Cowboys. As we tape here, we don't know yet the fate of Zeke Elliott for week 5, but certainly there's enough to unpack in this one. The Cowboys, I know you watch that game closely, Jared Goff and company going in there and upsetting Dallas last week. So now here they are early in the season looking to battle some more adversity. Were able to overcome it the last time after they got throttled and Denver. What do you think about Green Bay coming in on extra rest and Dallas reeling a little bit?
Yeah, and we've seen Thursday teams play the following Sunday or Monday and look a little more prepared this year. It just seems like it's been a little bit of a trend this year where they've used their time wisely, they've gotten healthy, they've put in extra time watching the film. So certainly the Packers coming off kind of a strange Thursday night game, as tough as it was, because they lose Devontae Adams in the game. You know, Ty Montgomery gets hurt in the first series. You know, both those guys could play. I mean, that's the amazing thing. Just the fact that they're considering both for this game is pretty amazing. If not, they pivot. Geronimo Allison, maybe. Aaron Jones. You know, some of these guys have to step up. But it's a Cowboys defense that's not only given up its share of plays, but also not made big plays. Anthony Brown drops an interception. There was a fumble. Jared Goff puts the ball on the ground. It's lying there. They have the opportunity to get it. They don't make the key turnover. So as for as many as little bright spots they have, Xavier Woods and DeMarcus Lawrence and some of these guys, they don't have a complete picture defensively. And Jalen Smith, too, we talked about a lot this week.
Right, and you guys should definitely check out he's Eric at Home. I'm Arthur Arkish. Make sure you check out Eric's Way We Hear It at ProFootballWeekly.com this week. And make sure you check us out, this podcast, on iTunes. And not only subscribe, but leave us a rating and a review while you're there. Eric, you had written, too, I mean, the Cowboys' defense may be not able to capitalize on everything given what they're working with. Not as surprising as Dallas's offensive inconsistencies, and that's been with Zeke Elliott.
Yeah.
We talked about the Raiders' offensive line looking normal. At times, this Cowboys unit has, too. It's been a little bit stunning to see.
They look scorching on one drive. They could drive 200 yards if you want them to against a really good defense. And then the next, it's three plays and a punt. Now, I know that happens with every team, but the second half, they went for, you know, they scored on the first four possessions. They failed to score on their next four against the Rams. That's when the game pivoted. They make a special teams turnover. You know, a couple of key plays on special teams really helped the Rams in the second quarter. Get to the third quarter, and everything's kind of stalled. And, you know, with Elliott, he's such a volume guy. He's so good when he gets it. If they go away from him for a series or two, it changes the whole offensive plan a little bit. So Dak's been pretty damn good for the most part. Dez Bryant still makes his plays. He had some wins against Tremaine Johnson, but there's this weird stop and start thing with their offense that I can't explain sometimes that does happen.
Well, the Cowboys, if nothing, you know, historically have had to overcome as much distraction as any team in the NFL.
No.
But I think it's fair to question if maybe the all the off-field stories throughout the offseason, you know, are coinciding with this sort of sluggish start. I think it's only natural to mention it. What about the Rams, Eric? We just said that they went into Dallas and upset the Cowboys, and they're the highest scoring team in football. Sean McVay has sort of just worked miracles with Jared Goff and Todd Gurley thus far. Their first real test, though, with the Seahawks coming, and I don't mean to minimize what they've done thus far, but they've beaten up on the Colts and the 49ers and this Cowboys team whose issues we just mentioned. The Seahawks seem to be rounding into form a little bit, and this is going to be a real battle. I'm real anxious to see what Jared Goff looks like, this new and improved Goff versus this Seahawks defense.
Yeah, I mean, when we last saw Goff against the Seahawks, he was... You know, I mean, it was, you just felt bad for the kid. He wasn't prepared. It was a bad situation. He probably never should have been playing in the first place. You know, it was John Fossil as head coach. It was a primetime game. I will say this. The one thing I took away from that game last year with Goff was that there was such a heavy rush, and he moved well within the pocket. Mm-hmm. His accuracy was terrible in the game, but still, he showed a calm and a poise that made me think, okay, I think he's got a chance for that alone, where he just – he doesn't look totally frazzled out there. So that was the one thing when I watched Goff last year, I thought he may be scattershot. He may still have to feel defenses and all this stuff. But he felt pressure and moved pretty well around in the pocket. And so, you know, that obviously is a huge key anytime you play the Seahawks. And, you know, they started getting their pressures late last week and started getting a Jacoby Brissett, as you saw in that Monday night game, and making things happen defensively. And that's when they're at their best, right? I know they lose Chris Carson, big injury for them, but when the offense and the defense kind of feed into each other, especially making those turnovers, they're a tough team, whether they're playing in L.A., Seattle, or anywhere else.
What do you think about that backfield, if I can sneak in a fantasy football point? Because I know it's sort of a perplexing thing. Pete Carroll said he's going back to Thomas Rawls. Obviously, they still have Eddie Lacy. Mm-hmm. CJ Procise has been brilliant in many flashes so far in his early NFL career.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate, too, it'll be Rawls? It feels to me, as many backs as they've collected, I still think Pete Carroll wants to lean on someone. That's what we saw with Chris Carson before he got hurt. That's what we saw for 5 years with Marshawn Lynch.
I think you're absolutely right there. And you know, the committee thing didn't really work last year. You know, they tried different combinations. They tried to go with one guy and, you know, Michael and all these different guys. It just didn't feel right. I think to him, that was a big reason why Chris Carson was getting the bulk of the carries the last couple of weeks, is because, A, he's the kind of guy who can grind you down over four quarters, but B, he did want to have that sort of familiarity, that rhythm. I think it will be Rawls. I think Lacy will be the change-up guy. J.D. McKissic may be out there. He showed some big play splash. Procise is a more natural receiver than probably any of those guys. So, yeah, you'll see all four. But if I had to guess to your question, I would say Thomas Rawls will get the bulk of the handoffs in a traditional sense, I guess.
I know we're both big Wade Phillips believers and fans of his, both as a guy and as a coach. But that run defense, I know that's what he probably has circled on his bulletin board this week, is what needs to get fixed. So Seattle's going to likely challenge that group, I would think. Just kind of moving down the schedule here a little bit. You got the undefeated Chiefs heading into Houston, and no story bigger right now going off of Sunday than Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. Pretty fun. This one will be in primetime, and if there's anything we know about Deshaun Watson, there's no stage that's too big for him. It seems like he thrives under those conditions.
And that's what makes him so fun, I think, is that, you know, even coming in week one and in that awful situation at halftime, I mean, that wasn't the way Texans draw it up, obviously.
Yep.
But, you know, he handled himself pretty well there. He got more comfortable the next week, and then the last 2 weeks have just been fantastic. I mean, it's been Star Wars watching. It's like the Clemson offense, and I give Bill O'Brien some credit. I've been hard on him in the past for game management issues and other stuff and personnel questions and things like that, but he folded in a few pages from what Clemson did, whether it was the speed option play near the goal line there early on with Lamar Miller, whether it was some of the play. I mean, they play actioned the death, you know, the heck out of them.
Yeah, the Titans.
Yeah, the Titans. And it just, you know, if they have some semblance of a run game, it really does work. So I liked it. It was under center. It was in the shotgun. It was mixing up. Your boy Fuller is back now. That's huge. They got another weapon out there. They're a fun team, and I'm excited to see what this matchup gives us.
How do you reconcile, though, Bill O'Brien's inability to recognize that Deshaun Watson should have been on the field to start week one, and then with, because I agree, the scheme last week was awesome. Fuller coming back just added speed and dynamic ability to that group. But I don't know. It's kind of hard because I wonder what was the reason for throwing Savage out there in the first place if you saw something along these lines in practice every day.
Yeah.
O'Brien, that is.
And funny how anonymous sources tend to sort of pop up.
Rick Smith, right?
Yeah, crucial times like these when we have these kind of questions. I mean, there was a report this week that it was Smith, not O'Brien, who was pushing for Watson to get more time to develop and percolate and all that stuff and marinate, whatever the word is. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that story came out this week. I don't fully buy into it, but I will say that, I mean, because I believe on some level O'Brien felt like Savage was the better fit for his system.
Mm-hmm.
But that still doesn't excuse him for not adapting his system in the first place and giving Watson a shot, right?
That's my biggest coaching pet peeve is coaches who are too rigid. And maybe this is a decent segue. I don't want to pile on. We talked about him last week, Hub and I did. But Bruce Arians' offensive line right now is scary. I feel bad for Carson Palmer. In this era of the NFL, I love the Bruce Arians' and the Todd Haley's, the guys that will sling it a little bit, have the 5-7 step drops. Dirk Cutter's a great example. But doesn't Arians have to adjust right now, given what he has to work with, if he wants to try and get Carson Palmer through a full season? The Cardinals survived because of Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in overtime to beat the Niners. And they're still in this thing. They've got a really tough cross-country trip to a dangerous Eagles defensive front that's much better than San Francisco's. But how can Palmer survive with these 7-step drops in this deep passing game?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's really worrisome because Carson Palmer not only has had multiple knee injuries,
right,
but at this stage of his career has probably taken a lot of other damage as well. So, yeah, unless they use those replacements for David Johnson better, or unless they find somebody who can block, or they have tight ends who can chip in and help out as well, I mean, this Eagles team's going to, even without Cox, they're going to chew him up. Timmy Jernigan is going to play it, it looks like, and, you know, they have waves of rushers. They can bring it, and I think they feel like their best hope is not to have to rely on their secondary, you know, because obviously if the protection holds up, weak secondary against some deep threats, bad mix. But
right.
Yeah, I just that worries me. I think you're absolutely spot on with this, and it concerns me about his long term health.
What do you think about what the Eagles are doing? 3-1 atop the NFC East. Doug Peterson has found a run game since losing Darren Sproles. Interestingly.
Right.
And in Carson Wentz, maybe we're not talking about him a lot because it's suddenly a ball control offense there. And Jared Goff, the number one overall pick from last year, is stealing all the headlines.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the Eagles have going? And I'll just throw this at you again. I'm kind of it's out of left field. It's only 1 year later, but what about a redraft today? Goff versus Wentz.
Oh, man.
Are you still? What are you thinking?
I was.
Because I was a Wentz guy. I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, I liked Wentz a little bit better. I kind of understood why the Rams went Goff. And again, this is saying this full, you know, I mean, I know what Goff's done this year. He's been great.
Yep.
I liked Wentz just a little bit better. And he's played really well so far.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's been very good too.
Yeah. I mean, the second half, I know the Chargers sort of made that late push there. But, you know, moving safeties with his eyes, looking composed, looking less chaotic than he did early in the year when – God bless him. He's trying to make a play, and he's flailing around out there, throwing off balance, sidearm, and getting hit and all that. It looks a little bit more composed now, and he's big time. He's got Nelson Aguilar back in the offense. I mean, that guy was as written off as they come.
And Alshon and Torrey Smith haven't started doing it for him
Alshon
yet.
Alshon and Torrey, I'm with you. So once those guys start producing, they were my pick to win the division. I thought Cowboys would have their issues. Didn't know about Zeke, but I thought the Eagles, even with some shortcomings like the run game and the secondary, could be the best team in this division.
It's looked good so far. It's certainly been a smart coaching job thus far to lean on that run game. I know it's age-old cliche, but it's true, and maybe this is another good segue because Mitch Trubisky getting ready to debut Monday night, this year's number 2 overall pick, welcoming in the Vikings, whom the Bears kind of started their tailspin last year at Soldier Field on Halloween with just a frightful performance for Minnesota's defense. What do you anticipate? I'll just go ahead and throw it out there. We just taped our Chicago Football Now TV show, and Eric Edholm has predicted the upset this week. So tell me what you think.
My picks are terrible anyways. I might as well make them fun. I'm curious. Right before we tape this, I'm about to go up to House Hall and talk to some of the players. I'm curious to see what the vibe is up there. Yeah. I think there was just this sense, Arthur, and I'm sure you, if like everybody else, have gathered that there was just such a limitation on what they could do with Glenn. And when he started turning the ball over, it was just there was no chance. I mean, the fact that they won that Steelers game to me is still stunning. I mean, just that, you know, that you put the ball on the ground five times and you come up with four of them, that's luck, you know. So right. So we'll see. Can he light a fire under some of these young playmakers? Can the line kind of get juiced up a little bit? And I'm worried about the Vikings without Dalvin Cook. You know, Adam Thielen's been fumbling a little bit too, and so
could be a second string backfield if Case Keenum gets another start. Right. So you're right about Thielen too. That's disappointing because I mean everything else has looked great.
Great hands, right?
He and Stephon Diggs. Well, right, and he's made some big catches. But they had a chance last week, and Glover Quinn forces that fumble in the final 2 minutes, and Thielen's got to get that corrected to be sure. We're not really going to hit on the Thursday night matchup just because of the timing of this podcast, but it's unfortunate because I think New England going into Tampa Bay is going to be a lot of fun.
Shootout, yeah.
That one should shoot out. I'm trying to see what else looks good here worth discussing.
How about the 0-4 teams? Like Giants, Chargers, I mean, is this the end of the Eli Rivers era? Those two guys connected forever, obviously, that trade. I mean, I guess which team's in worse shape? I've been asking people, like, I don't even know. Like, are the Giants going to win some games? Are the Chargers just always going to be plagued by these late-game issues? I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, Eric, and you tell me if I'm seeing it wrong, but I don't think Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning are the problems there right now at all, are they? I mean, Rivers had a big turnover fest 2 weeks ago, and I know what you mean. It's just there's a natural connection, the 0-4 picks, the trade, and everything. Yep. But I have been more disappointed by the Giants' defense. Yep. I think it's like 30th in the league in run defense, and they don't have anyone in the second. Well, they don't have anyone at corner on the outside other than Janoris Jenkins.
He is the
apple of offensive coordinator's eye, is what I said, because I will take those cheap puns. That's troubling. But look, Anthony Lynn is a rookie head coach, and this was going to be an adjustment, relocating a team and trying to kind of rebuild on the fly.
With no fans.
What's Ben McAdoo's excuse in year two? That thing's kind of ugly. But once again, the offense seems to have figured it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Right now, the defense is more concerning.
Yeah, they haven't been able to put four quarters together. I mean, it's just, you know, that Detroit game, that Monday nighter was just awful, putrid, whatever. But they've at least made stride. I mean, you lose on a 61-yarder in week three. Dude, okay, yep. I get it. You know, that's not that. They came back in that game. You felt like they go into Tampa with some confidence. They did. They fall behind early. They come back and take the lead. You're like, okay, maybe this Giants team has arrived. And they give up some big plays at the end. Last week, it was like Steve Spagnuolo, hey, let's just blitz every other down and hope it works. It did work a couple times. More often than not, didn't. And it's just a consistency issue, drive to drive, quarter to quarter. They have not had a good four-quarter game this year.
You know, for as awesome as that defense was last year, he was kind of relying on the blitz, too, for a pass rush as well, if you remember, especially after Jason Pierre-Paul went down. Now he's hurting. Olivia Vernon is hurting. This thing, if it's not off the rails already, has a chance to really go. At least they're playing at home,
right,
and the Chargers have to make that cross-country trip.
Yeah,
but the Chargers are probably thrilled just to get out of L.A. because how embarrassing of an optic is that just to see tarps on StubHub Center, the upper deck. What an absolute embarrassment for the NFL and for the Spanos family.
Yeah, 27,000-seat stadium, and you can't fill it. You know, I mean, that's a tough deal. Long term, do they have a future there? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Could they ever go back to San Diego? Are they the new London Chargers? I don't know. I mean, there's so many issues with that team that go well beyond the X and O's.
Just a couple minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. He's Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Harkus. Check us out on iTunes, please. Pro Football Weekly podcast, and definitely check out the website, profootballweekly.com. A ton of great content up there, new content this week and today on Thursday. Let's finish here, Eric. We couldn't really talk a ton about the Bucs just because they're going to play likely as you guys are hearing this podcast. We don't want to put ourselves out there too much. What about the Titans, though? The other sexy offseason pick that just got, as we mentioned, throttled in Houston, and that's not even the worst of their problems right now. Marcus Mariota has a hamstring. Brandon Whedon is the contingency plan there.
Sweet. Sounds fun.
What do you think? And they're going into Miami, and Adam Gase has some issues on his hands after a 10-6 season. What do you think with these two clubs?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at the Dolphins' schedule, remember they play every week from here on out,
and
no bye anymore. This is the most winnable game, I think, left on the Dolphins' schedule, which is, isn't that crazy? Like, I'm not saying the Titans are amazing, but they're not trash either. Obviously, even without Mariota, we're not putting too much on them. But,
yeah.
But I mean, I looked at their schedule yesterday and I thought, you know, I don't know where the next win is other than this game. So I think the Dolphins are going to come in having been embarrassed in London, trending downward, you know, decent opening game and been terrible since then pretty much. So it's going to be a fired up Dolphins team, or they're just awful. So the Titans, I don't know, all of a sudden, yeah, like you said, they've kind of gone down the drain a little bit.
And I tend to think it's going to be the former. They're going to be a fired-up team. I have too much respect for Adam Gase to think that that team is going to go in the tank in week three or week four or whatever. I guess we're in week five now. It's their week four. What about Dick LeBeau's secondary? We knew it was going to take time with all the new pieces, but, man, Adoree Jackson hasn't looked good. LeSean Sims, they got issues back there. That defense has it obviously hasn't been good enough to even you know, even when it is on the field with that exotic smash mouth attack that they're trying to run on offense.
Yeah. I mean, a few years ago I wrote moves I wish we could undo. Like, I think the Patriots regret letting Logan Ryan go. And I think the Titans probably regret giving that much money to him and maybe not other, you know, fix other spots. Not that he's not a good player. I'm just saying, you know, maybe then New England doesn't sign Gilmore and that whole thing. But yeah, so this could apply in that case. And they still got some growth to do. I always felt like Brian Arekpo was miscast a little bit as a stand-up guy, and they don't have the full picture up front defensively. But, yeah, it's tough for LeBeau. You know, he used to be the guy that just shut rookie quarterbacks down. Now he's been undressed by one, and I think it's personnel as much as anything.
I hadn't even thought about that, actually. Yeah. That's I didn't make that connection last week with what Watson was doing to a Dick LeBeau defense. It's a great point, though. And just lastly, Eric, because you mentioned the Stephon Gilmore contract. Again, he's going to play tonight, and maybe he'll have three interceptions, and it won't matter.
Six interceptions.
But I kind of had to think about it when I was reading Your Way We Hear It yesterday about Trumaine Johnson, another inconsistent player with awesome length and all the skills you want in today's modern day press shutdown corner. Is some team going to overlook his inconsistencies and give him a Stephon Gilmore type deal next offseason? Yeah. That's just what happens, right?
That's the NFL. There are 32 teams. He's played for one of them. Somebody's going to say, oh, we can fix those issues. We're not going to have him play like Wade does. You know, yeah, I mean, that's just one other, you know, thing that I talk. And I think sort of the plan all along was we got a franchise. We have to. We don't really have the bodies. Now, they ended up trading E.J. Gaines, which I didn't necessarily see coming before the season. But
right.
You know, Wade campaigned to keep him, and it was never going to be viable past this year at anything close to the $16.7 million he was making. He's the top-paid corner this year in the NFL. He's certainly not playing like it. Granted, tough schedule, absolutely. He's faced some really good receivers this year. He's done some good things. He had a good week one. You know, he looked good against the Panthers. He had flashes against the Redskins, but then he gets undressed by Pierre Garçon. Dez got the better of him last week. You know, he dropped a would-be interception in the end zone. So it just hasn't been the start, but it may not matter, like you said.
But if the Rams are for real this year, they need Trumaine. I mean, he's got to overcome this rocky start, I would think, because he's going to have to be an integral part of that defense.
I would think so.
And maybe we'll just tease and we'll talk about it next week. But it is interesting. You mentioned E.J. Gaines. That Buffalo secondary, you don't need to throw $60 million guaranteed at a lockdown corner, I guess.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people do the names of Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, E.J. Gaines, Tre'Davious White, the first-round pick. I'm just so impressed with how quickly that thing has turned around.
Yeah, the guy that team's realize now that they have to pick on is Leonard Johnson. He had a terrible game last week. He was the one weak link, and he's the nickel guy, so he's only out there, you know, 60% of the time or two-thirds of the time, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, the other four spots have been tremendous. And I saw people rating the Bills as having the worst secondary in the NFL entering the season. This is the worst unit, and they're going to have to play zone. It's going to be a lot like Carolina last year. They're going to give up a ton of yards. You know, just hasn't been the case. These guys are playmakers. They're heady. They've adopted the scheme well. This is a great – Sean McDermott has proven his coaching chops from Monday to Saturday. He just isn't a good in-game coach yet, in my opinion.
Yep, that is a great call, and we'll talk more about the Bills next week, especially if they go into Cincinnati and earn another road upset. But that's going to do it for this week's Pro Football Weekly podcast. We really appreciate you being with us. Once again, check us out at ProFootballWeekly.com and on iTunes to subscribe to the show. For Eric Edholm, I am Arthur Arkish. Enjoy the Week 5 action. We'll catch up with you next week.
Later, gang.